Good evening. It's 6 p.m. January 23, 2024, and I call the Borough Assembly to order. Tonight's Pledge of Allegiance will be led by Assemblymember DeBoard.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Yes, Assemblymembers Robbins.
Here.
Morrison. Otteson.
Here.
Dalrymple.
Here.
Powell.
Here.
DeBoard.
Here.
And Mayor Miller.
Here. Ceremonial matters, there are none, so we'll move to persons to be heard.
We don't have anybody in the audience.
All right. Anyone in the audience wishes to be heard on any agenda item? All right. Moving on, amendments to the agenda. Any assembly member have any amendment to offer up? Okay, seeing none. Conflict of interest. All right, none. That brings us to item 6, consent agenda.
Move to approve the consent agenda as submitted.
Second.
Okay, motion by Powell, second by Robbins. Any discussion? All right, poll vote on accepting the consent agenda.
Assemblymembers Otteson?
Yes.
Dalrymple?
Yes.
Powell?
Yes.
DeBoard?
Yes.
Robbins?
Yes.
And Mayor Miller?
Yes. Item 7, Borough Manager's Report. And Assembly, you have a hard copy here for the public. It'll be posted on our website, and there's hard copies in the lobby.
Yeah, thanks, Madam Mayor. So new structure for the Borough Manager's Report. You guys can give me feedback on how you like it, but we'll kind of adjust towards the goals of the Assembly and kind of do a similar structure. But I'm actually going to read through this one because there's so much, and I don't want to miss certain things. So for the listening public. Ongoing landslide recovery and response, the City and Borough of Wrangell remains steadfast in its commitment to scaling hazardous debris from the outfall of the 11-mile Zamovia Highway landslide. The Borough's contractor, BW Enterprise, has notified the Borough that they will exceed the $249,000 contract signed on November 21st, 2023. In conformance with the Wrangell Municipal Code 510050G, the original contract was signed on an emergency basis, allowing the Borough to deviate from competitive bidding procedures. Additional work above $249,000 will need to occur in order to adequately safeguard the public from hazardous debris remaining on the affected properties. And just for context, there's some oil tanks, there's some additional vehicles down there, some other trailers. So we want to make sure we take care of that in an expeditious fashion. The borough expects FEMA to make a federal declaration by the end of January. I had conversations with FEMA recently about that, and so they anticipate to stay consistent with that timeline. To ensure that the borough is in compliance with FEMA procurement requirements, the borough will competitively bid the next portion of work in excess of $249,000, so there is not any complications with the anticipated federal reimbursement. Additionally, the borough has been working with the families directly affected by the landslide. Through conversations with representatives of each of these families, the borough will be supporting them in a DNR land swap provided by AS 3805870. As the properties are hazardous to the public, the borough is bringing forward Resolution 0124-1838 at tonight's meeting to declare these properties as hazardous and setting the property values at $0 for assessment purposes. This will offer guidance to the assessor who will eventually declare the properties as usable and therefore carry a $0 value, Once these two steps occur, the supporting documentation will be set to State of Alaska DNR, and they will begin a preliminary finding report and initiate the land swap process. So this is a critical point. I know that the families have elected to pursue this. The DNR land swap, just for those that want to know, is actually an inventory of properties available in similar value to the property before the landslide had occurred. And so they'll be, available. It won't just be in Wrangell. It could be anywhere across the state of Alaska. So provide some justice to those families and try to give them some value back to their property. The borough has also been supporting the Wrangell Cooperative Association and their federal disaster declaration. FEMA personnel were in town last week to meet with WCA leadership and the borough to assess costs incurred by WCA throughout the landslide response. And I understand that they're the first tribe to actually declare in the state of Alaska, which is really exciting and a big, big moment for them. So I appreciate all the work getting to that point. And this is a really good demonstration of our partnership together and In the perfect world, they're declared and approved on the federal level, and they'll get hazard mitigation funding as well, so we'll have a little bit of double dipping. The state timelines where much of the hazard debris field remains has presented some challenges to both WCA and the borough. FEMA has said that to seek reimbursement for the cleanup of those tidelines, WCA or the borough would have to demonstrate legal ownership or responsibility for these tidelines. WCA and the borough are hoping that their combined emergency declarations will be accepted or acceptable to claim these costs under the FEMA public assistance. That said, both of our organizations will be working together to iron out the complexities, as unacceptable to leave the tidelines in disrepair with hazardous material and oil oozing from vehicles and equipment. Not only does leaving the tidelines pose a threat to the public safety, it threatens the subsistence lifestyle of our community, including clam beds, natural streams, and crab and shrimp fisheries in the vicinity. We will continue to work with State Alaska DNR to inform them of their obligation to clean up these tidelines. So, WCA strategically targeted these tidelines because it fits much of their platform and subsistence lifestyle. They have gotten included in their preliminary damage assessment those tideland costs for cleanup, not including the organic material, but all the hazardous debris, so the sharp metal, the oil, the vehicles. So that's a good good start. And you know, I think the approval was $567,000. So that's really helpful to our community. Furthermore, the borough has been meeting with DNR's Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys, DGGS, as we often say. We met with them on Thursday, January 18th. They explained that a general causation report would be shared with the borough and its residents by the end of the week. I since have talked to Mort Larson. They are now saying it's going to be next week. They couldn't provide me a link because they're not sure where they're going to share it yet. But once we get that, we'll notify the public, we'll share the link, and we're actually going to post it on our borough Facebook page and the Wrangell Landslide site, so Landslide Recovery site, and our website. Printed copies will also be available to residents here at City Hall. There are further grant opportunities available to the borough to pursue additional investigation and field work on landslide hazards in the borough. We will be applying for the FEMA CTP program, of which we started an executive summary in that grant application process. And thanks to DGS, they're going to help us with that grant application. And there's also a Rapid National Science Foundation grant program for additional field work. And just so you're aware, Sitka actually, you know, this is 9 years later from their landslide, is just wrapping up one of their reports from the National Science Foundation. So this process is a long haul. However, I think we can learn from our neighboring communities and work to like a two-year, you know, plan to get everything buttoned up out there and understood and a platform updated.
So again, for the public, we have not received any report. No. As soon as we receive it, perhaps next week, we'll immediately issue it to the community.
Yep, we'll immediately issue it. And I know that Tom Weider, Public Works Director, sat in on the meeting too. It sounds like they're going to keep it really general.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a really comprehensive report of these could have been factors, this could have been, you know, and they're not going to comment on properties being safe or unsafe. The state's not going to take that position. So just want to create some expectations around that, because I think a lot of people are waiting for that answer of, am I safe where I am? And that's just never going to come from the state. It's likely not going to come from the borough either. We're probably just going to have an advisory platform based on weather conditions in the perfect scenario. LIDAR data is available from July was the most recent collection. It was published in November. But what this report is specifically doing is comparing the July LIDAR versus the post-landslide LIDAR and commenting on that. And they'll note the conditions of this, you know, that were attributable in causing the slide.
I got the impression it's not going to give the answers the public wants. It's going to just relate what happened.
Yep.
So.
Yep. We will pursue additional grant funding for a comprehensive analysis.
Yeah.
But for now, we're still kind of in that planning stage of what this next long haul is going to look like. In an effort to remain transparent and inform citizens to the greatest degree, the borough continues to craft a plan for dissemination of information regarding historical and current risk information about landslides within the borough. We'll have a point of contact from DNR, DOT, and the borough that will ensure the most recent information is conveyed to citizens of Wrangell without hesitation or delay. All information will be posted to the Wrangell Landslide Recovery and our borough Facebook pages. We'll also communicate developments to KSDK and the Sentinel. Some of the borough's leadership team was able to attend Petersburg Landslide Talk with Speaker Lisa Bush from the Sitka Science Center. I attended that this last Wednesday. Throughout listening to the discussion, the borough has since thought to start a conversation with Petersburg Borough to jointly approach a landslide advisory system. So I think the plan would be WCA, us, Petersburg Borough, and PIA, and some other third parties to actually pool funding for a platform. Sika told me that the platform that they have was $100,000 just to get up and going, and that's not inclusive of weather stations and data collections. It's really expensive, so why not partner with a neighboring municipality on this? And I think that would be an efficient use of resources. And many of our citizens travel back and forth for work and sports and to Petersburg, so I think it's a good thing to pursue jointly. The LiDAR data in the Borough Manager's Report, most recent collection, there's a link that you guys can view and study up the LiDAR that was released. As you know, we've all experienced some inclement weather over the past couple weeks, and we've had some remarkable contributions from Light and Power and the Public Works Department. Wrangell Light and Power has been sent through the ringer, and we have interim director Dwight Yancey that's been on the job. And Dwight and crew responded to a damaged pole when caused by a vehicle collision at 2 miles of Movia Highway. Wrangell Municipal Light and Power quickly braced the damaged pole with the cross arm to prevent further damage and loss of power. The borough has been assured that the individual's insurance will cover the cost of pole replacement. Wrangell Municipal Light and Power also responded to Shoemaker Loop during a cold snap where a transformer began boiling oil. They quickly notified residents affected, made the necessary transformer replacement, and power was restored to those individuals. Finally, Wrangell Municipal Light and Power was diligent about monitoring usage across the SEPA grid. The borough has put on a standby notice that the cold weather prompted higher consumption across SEPA's grid. Generators did not have to run, although we did post a notice in the case that we did that we would potentially charge a fuel surcharge, as Petersburg does. We really like to thank WNLP for their hard work and preserving public safety and service in really adverse conditions. And then for just the public, there's also a link to the SEPA hydro SCADA system that kind of shows the usage across the grid. It's actually pretty fun to monitor and see, you know, as people go home to dinner, it spikes up quite a bit, and throughout the day it kind of languishes off, but gives us a pulse when we have these cold snaps and when we can actually anticipate running our generators. So luckily no costs incurred there, and but the crew did put some time on. I was sitting next to Chris Stewart at bowling, and he was scanning it the whole time, just waiting to get called out. So it's good that they're that diligent. Public Works Department put in a lot of work too. We'd really like to thank them for keeping our streets clean throughout all the snow that we've seen, all the ice. We'd undoubtedly have the best plow service in Southeast Alaska. I've talked to a lot of other city managers. We offer an exceptional service here. I know that sometimes we've got to be patient. It doesn't make sense to plow when the snow's still falling really intensely, but they do a great job and really like to thank them. Public Works crew, and I sent a notice to the assembly, also had a significant water main break occur on Stikine Avenue right there at the intersection by the ferry terminal at 9 p.m. on January 12, 2024. Crews worked throughout the night in the single-digit temperatures to perform these repairs. Instances, a reminder that our underground infrastructure must rank higher on our capital priorities list. And so I think this is a point at which other managers maybe failed to acknowledge, but in our capital projects and priorities list, we don't really have project scope for underground infrastructure. And when I've been made aware of it just in the short few weeks I've been city manager, that these breaks happen frequently and almost at a rate at an unsustainable rate. So I really would like to work with Public Works to address underground infrastructure in-house. We may have to allocate additional resources to that department to pull these summertime projects off. We may have to consider the community having a little bit of a tolerance for D1 roads in some cases. For example, if we were to pursue McKinnon Avenue, which is right next to Audison's this summer, and we tore all that up, they replaced the underground infrastructure, and that was D1. Maybe it has to be D1 for a couple years, but if we can work with DOT to have a frequency of them coming and bringing their asphalt plant for their own inventory, but also to address ours, it's an efficient use of resources, and it's really the only path I see forward to be able to address our underground infrastructure in a somewhat frugal manner. And we just don't have the grants capacity, because not only do you have to get the grant for the road surfacing, which is really hard, but you have to get the grant separately for the water and sewer and aligning those. You could wait 15 years before we get one project, and then how many water mains and sewer lines, break in the meantime. So I think it's a really critical thing to turn our attention to. And if you zoom in on that picture, I know it's small in your report tonight, but if you zoom in on those water mains, they don't look very good. So it's time to start getting to work on those, I think. And I think Tom would agree, pretty cold that night. State lobbying efforts and legislative priorities. So me and Patty were going to be going to the governor's State of the State address. It's kind of like the State of the Union, but just for the state of Alaska. So we'll be with some of the guests up there. We're really thankful for all the governor's contributions and getting that $5 million in for the supplemental appropriation for FY24. I actually listened to the opening statements by the Senate Finance Committee today, and Bert Stedman and Lacey, I can't remember her last name, the governor's OMB, delivered the notice that Ringel has been allocated $5 million. The legislature still has to approve it. So I'll keep you guys updated on the status of that. It's not a for sure thing. Sometimes these things can be, you know, they could be used as political ammo in cases. So I want to see this process through, and me and Patty are going to go up there. We're going to lobby for that. We're going to lobby for the DCIP Major Maintenance Program grant. We're number 16 on the list, if you recall. That's $42 million in aggregate spending, so that's a big priority while we're up there. Public safety building. I understand that there's an Anchorage public safety building that needs to be rehabbed, and if we could ride the coattails of that, that'd be a really great means of obtaining some level of funding. So that'll be the top three priorities. And then, you know, I want to get a better idea of the protections over our commercial fishing industry. And I know there's a lot of legislature debate going on right now on what they're going to do for foreign markets. And so we want to be a part of that conversation, obviously, with Trident coming in and reinvigorating our commercial fishing background here, that we want to do right by all those constituents. And then there's also a pretty big move with the declining workforce in the state of Alaska to reinstate the defined benefit plan for state and municipal employees, which would overwhelmingly attract people to the workforce for the state, for teachers. And if you look at the numbers, I think Alaska was at 480,000 in the workforce in 2012, and now they're down to 430,000. So significant decrease, and we'll get to population here in a little bit. The capsules list is there. We'll also be addressing that in our legislative and lobbying pursuits. Tourism update. Kate and I had the opportunity to visit with Cruise Line Agency of Alaska. Bob Berto and Rick Erickson had a really productive introductory meeting. Just kind of wanted to get an essence of what their vision is, communicate our vision, and see if our interests align. Basically, our message is we want to control the growth of tourism and preserve our authentic Alaskan lifestyle. However, we will explore and evaluate all opportunities and bring those forward to the public. So there's been a lot of concerns, I think, about, hey, we're going to bring these mega ships in here and sell out the town. We're going to look like Ketchikan. And whatever we do, we're going to make it a very public process. We're going to explore every opportunity. And as I'll get to the end of this, our population is declining. We're going to have to do something, but we're certainly not going to sell out the town. And I think we just want to grow all our industries, and that's kind of our perspective on it. So good, productive meeting. Strategic plan. I don't know that the borough ever had one, but we're going to do one. And strategic plan is a little bit different than a comprehensive plan. Comprehensive plans, a lot of land-based context in there. This is really going to be the assembly. Namely, Patty gave us a five-page list of goals, and I got director goals. This past week, every director submitted goals. I'm going to put those things together, and we're going to kind of articulate the steps of achieving those goals over a 3 to 5 year period, and some quicker, some just this year. So I'm pretty excited about it because it'll give a guide for me as a manager, but also the next manager to be able to execute and continue the vision for the borough. So really excited about that. I got a schedule there for you on steps. We'll do a workshop, and then we'll do a work session with the assembly, a town hall for public comment and adoption on May 14th. Budget development process is kicking off. As stated above, the strategic plan will be drafted in unison with this budget. There's much economic uncertainty for the borough and the state, declining oil prices, a reduced workforce, a fishing industry in the gutter. The borough must be conservative in this budget cycle and truly focus on the functions of government that are essential in preserving the quality of life in Wrangell. Frivolous spending will be cut, and the borough will do its best to keep the tax and rate burden stagnant in real terms. And what I mean by real terms is after an inflation adjustment, we want to keep rates and tax burden pretty much where they're at now, because we acknowledge it's an economically uncertain time. And I think the state and their capital are in their operating budget, depending on $85, $82 per barrel oil, is a pretty strong assertion. And if you get a red administration in the White House and we're drilling domestically, that oil price is probably going to dip down, which is, you know, it could have a lot of impacts on our state funding. I've got a schedule for the budget development, but we're going to start that process on February 15th. We're going to send the worksheets out to the directors. We'll have a month turnaround, then we'll go through the manager and director meetings one-on-one, start cutting and adding where we need to. And then we'll actually get a new addition on May 10th. Is one of our best practices moving forward is actually engaging the community. So we'll do a town hall on what people want to see in the budget, see if it aligns with our strategic plan. And this will be a good iterative process for people to communicate, hey, we don't see a road project in here. We don't see, we're worried about that garbage truck, or, you know, be an opportunity for people to communicate the needs and wants of the borough. So really excited about that. The manager's office continues to overhaul the over 2-decade-long outdated emergency operations plan. I've been using Haynes and Sitka's as a platform for revising that. So Haynes is 250 pages, so I've been, if you want a good sleeping pill, you can read the EOP before you go to bed. I've been doing it for the last couple nights, and it's pretty dense, but it'll definitely serve us moving forward. So I got a schedule there, should have it slated for adoption on April 9th. I may be a little ambitious in the schedule, but it's tentative, and we're going to try to stick to the timeline. Collective bargaining agreement, non-union plan. IBW and the borough has reached a tentative agreement on January 10th, 2024. The red line CBA is with each party's legal team for review, and our attorney has gave us the green light. CBW union membership will vote on the negotiated agreement the week of January 29th, that's next week. Meanwhile, the management office will be working on an equitable plan for non-union employees. I plan on working through that this weekend and working with department directors to solidify that plan, and we'll roll it out about the same time as hopefully the union adopts the proposed CBA. This year there will not just be a blanket percentage applied to the wage and grade schedules, rather the borough will be regrading positions and finding parity between the roles that have similar duty, responsibility, and expertise. The borough remains committed to retaining a highly capable and motivated staff. I think that served our basis of the CBA negotiations. We really do feel that way. The relationship between the borough and the IBW is strong. We'll do everything possible to ensure all employees of the borough are compensated fairly and equitably for their work. So we want to retain those professionals, attract new ones. Hopefully Senate Bill 88 passes and we get a defined benefit plan that helps us attract new employees as well. We got some great community contributions coming up. Finance Department and library staff are going to be actually hosting a senior exemption application day. We're going to help seniors fill out their applications at the library on February 27th. It's a Tuesday from 12 to noon. We'll have coffee and cookies, and I know that that's been a problem, is getting assistance filling out an application. So we're gonna head up there and offer that service to the community. So excited to do that. Ringgold Volunteer Fire Department has been making good use of our light tower that we inherited from the landslide, offering a little nighttime sledding for the kids on the sledding hill. So we appreciate the volunteer fire department for offering that, and stay tuned for more snow and let your kids go up the sledding hill. Tentatively scheduled for February 24th, and Kate might comment on this a little bit later tonight. Economic Development Department will be hosting a financing symposium at the Nolan Center from 9 to 12. This will be a comprehensive session for folks who want to learn the process for buying a home, both from a financing and municipal code perspective. So it'll be an all-inclusive, lots of different vendors, banks, municipal professionals, from start to finish on building a home and permitting and how to achieve financing, how we're going to sell the Aldertop lots. This is really geared towards Aldertop because, as you know, we'll be pursuing the sale of that property, those parcels rather. This last Saturday, we attended a banquet at the Elks for honoring the first responders for the landslide event. I'd really like to thank Alaska Airlines for making that all possible, and as well as Chief Radke and those folks that helped put it on. So it was a really nice night. I know that the mayor and the vice mayor attended, and it was really nice. So I think everybody had a good time. Now there's an infrastructure report. I don't need to read all of it, unless you guys want me to. But the most notable thing is, and Tom could provide an update probably, is our water treatment plants had some blasting occur yesterday and today. So construction of the site works actually beginning, and that's really exciting. So we'll have some further updates down the line. A couple weeks, we have another monthly report. But I have updates thanks to Amber for all the projects we have ongoing. We have several projects that are close to going out to bid: high school elevator, the solid waste transfer station loading dock, Nolan Center generators, standby upgrades. So we're nearly there. Port and Harbor security cameras are the contractors in town. They're going up. We'll have an illegal dumping code in front of you guys next week because kind of synergetically timed.
Anodes.
The anode project is soon. There's going to be several shipments of anodes, so we're going to have to time those shipments with the contractor for installation. So be done by the busy season, but those are underway. So preserve those pilings. And if I'm happy to talk about any project that's listed here, but pretty much summed it up. So a couple points of discussion I'd like to bring up. First and foremost, I know, and Madam Mayor, you could lead this discussion on the ADU. You've talked to a lot of citizens about the ADU code that we adopted, and Mr. Bill Gaines came in here and talked about his concerns. My understanding is electric and sanitation are fine because those rates, you know, you have an individual container for your dumpster, you have electric per kilowatt, but water and sewer potentially could be an issue because theoretically you could have an existing ADU, a mother-in-law home or something like that, and that water and sewer bill is only hitting the primary residence while the ADU could be utilizing that. I think the code structure already sets us up to be able to charge a rate to those ADU folks. However, I think it could be clarified clearer. So even if it's just a two-sentence code saying that all ADUs will pay the primary water and sewer rate, that might get us there. But I want to hear, I want to make sure I understand you guys' concerns regarding ADU and make sure I got the full picture.
Well, for the listening public, ADU means accessory dwelling unit, mm-hmm. and that's that limited to 800 square foot structure on your lot, and you have to meet the zoning code to build that structure. The comments that I'm hearing from the public, I thought were originally addressed when it stated in the code that the builder of the accessory dwelling unit would have to get a conditional use permit. Mm-hmm. And I thought that conditional would incorporate the mandate that will be on, you'll have to pay sewer fees, you'll have to pay water fees, you'll have to pay electric and mm-hmm. and have your own trash can because you're going to have your own address mm-hmm. when we get the addressing situated. But listening to the public, they're not so sure that restriction or mandate is embedded in the code. Mm-hmm. And I agree with them. I was just relying on the conditional use permit. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if we need to revisit the code and state clearly, because even the way it stands now, mm-hmm. and correct me if I'm wrong, you can. Okay. Yeah, it isn't on our agenda, and he is pointing out a legitimate contact or comment. Anyway, that's kind of what I'm hearing from the public. So I can talk to you more in depth about it.
Okay.
And
can I make a suggestion that maybe we, I don't know how to do this, but suspend what we did or have a workshop on this again, or have a workshop and go forward after that?
So,
go ahead.
So I think it's kind of clear what we were thinking. My suggestion would actually be, because we can't suspend what we did because it's okay. already in the code. Right.
Yeah, but we can.
But if we could, do a new ordinance and bring that forward for consideration.
I don't think it'd require a workshop. Just a couple sentences would clarify things.
Right.
So it should be a one-page thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just want to make sure that everybody kind of was understanding it the same, because I need to kind of understand how to move forward.
Yeah. Did I explain it well enough, Assembly? Okay. I don't know if you're hearing the same comments from the public. But anyway, I asked for that to come back to us.
Yes, and I was too.
Oh, okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. You did also? All right.
Okay, and there's a few more things. Barge ramp solutions. I've talked with the harbor master. I've talked with the economic development director. We're working on several options to work with AML and Sampson on in the future. And I'm going to try to meet with them down in Seattle on February 12th. I'll be down there anyway. and kind of present some of those options. So it'd be good to hash that out with them and look forward to arriving at a solution. Last thing really, Port and Harbor Insurance, we plan on bringing that to you guys next meeting. I know that the Port Commission needs to review it again on February 1st. I think they have some additional considerations to add to that, so that's forthcoming. And finally, we got our population determination in from the Department of Commerce, 2,039, down from nearly 2,400 in 2012. I would just take this time to say that I think whatever we do in the next 5 years, we're going to have to be somewhat bold in doing it. I'm really afraid for our community in Petersburg and like communities that our workforce is kind of dwindling. People aren't moving back at the rate that they're leaving. We have a pretty elderly population too, and that should be considered. And how do we get creative? How do we attract new industry? How do we be bold this next 5 years to stall some of that decline in population? And I think that's going to be a theme in our strategic plan, and we want to grow everything. So just to comment on that and my perspective. That's it.
All right. Any questions or comments on the manager's assembly member DeBoard?
Just one clarification with the Alder Top subdivision. Since we've postponed it, we're not still paying an observer to be there.
That's right? Correct. Okay. Yep.
Good question. All right. Anything else? All right. Assembly on to borough manager or borough clerk's report.
Not a whole lot to add, except for I believe the Port Commission is also going to look at the illegal dumping at their next meeting as well. Correct? Okay, and that should come to the assembly at the same time that the insurance item will. Also, let's see, the Wrangell Hospice reached out to me, and they are wanting to put on an event for people who are interested in hearing about end-of-life planning, and so they asked me to attend that. That will be in February. She reached out to me first, so she doesn't have a specific date. So once that date is solidified, probably on the next clerk's report, I will put that out there just to let people know, too, just a little extra advertising. So it's really important for people to know, for planning for their family and stuff like that. So. And also, let's see, the EMT firefighter property exemption that the assembly approved last year, that the fire department has sent the list of qualified firefighters to the finance department as required. And, our finance department is putting together the applications for those who are qualified to come in and sign those. So that's taken care of. So before I even thought about it, it was done.
And that's due March 1st?
It's due March 1st. It'll be done well before then. And then once they fill that out, they don't have to reapply. Right? So.
And we may just take the applications up to the fire hall on one of the Wednesday meetings and just knock them out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. And other than that, I don't have anything else to report.
Okay. Any questions, Assembly? All right. Item 9, Mayor and Assembly Business. Any Assembly member have anything to report? Okay. With the Assembly's permission, I'd like to re-advertise for Borough Manager position beginning February 1 and have that advertisement open until filled. Do I have approval from the Assembly? And then also, I appointed Assembly Member Powell and Dalrymple to vet the applicants and bring them forward to us for an interview. Is that still acceptable to the Assembly? All right. We will move forward with that then. All right. Any other business? Hearing none. Mayor and Assembly appointments, we have none, but we still have an opening in Parks and Rec. So if anyone is interested in volunteering, we would love to have you join that. All right, item 11 is a public hearing. 11A, request for the sale, exchange of borough-owned real property described as a portion of parcel 7, ASLS, 84-83, zoned commercial, adjacent to the Torkelson-Glasner subdivision, based on the requesting purchaser granting a utility easement acquisition on real property for the purpose of demonstrating borough site control for the water treatment plant improvement project. I will now open the public hearing and get an administrative report.
Yeah, so Madam Mayor, this is a little bit of a complex situation. Both our federal funding partners, USDA and EDA, for the water treatment plant project require that we demonstrate site control. And there was kind of a mishap with that. We previously had two backflush discharge lines that come down the water treatment plant property and run through, who's currently Don Glasner's property. In a prior plat of this, it showed the easement, but way back when there was a Forest Service trail removed off of that plat, there was also an easement that was removed off of it, and that was never caught. So we always understood that we had an easement there, and after further review, we couldn't demonstrate that. So we had to approach the current property owner, Mr. Don Glasner, and try to get an easement agreement. We were able to obtain an easement agreement, but in return, he's requested me to bring forward an additional land and sale exchange, of which he's requesting an additional 125 feet and 125 by 235 feet parcel of land on adjacent on the back side of his property. I believe you guys have that map available to you guys. And he wants it for below fair market value. It's nearly 30,000 square feet at total consideration to close out $11,478. So we've kind of highlighted the exchange or trade for borough real property or tidelands section of the municipal code for the procedures. This is really the approval to continue the process. It's, if we were to actually approve the sale, we'll have the quit claim deed. Still needs to be circulation in the newspaper and advertisement to adjacent property owners, so they need to be notified. So this is where we are, but this is basically approval of the assembly to proceed with this process. It's a bit unconventional, but we do have the easement agreement, and in a matter of good faith, we're bringing this forward to close out the deal.
Okay, and that adjacent property also demands an easement, correct?
That's correct. Yeah. And that's already been accounted for in the easement agreement. Yeah. So that easement actually runs through the prospective property that we'd be selling.
Okay. All right. I'm going to open it up to public hearing. Is there anyone who'd like to testify on this item? Okay. Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion. Close the public hearing and entertain a motion.
Recommend approving a sale exchange of borough-owned property described as portion of parcel 7 ASLS 84-83 zone commercial adjacent to the Torkelson-Glasner subdivision based on the requesting purchase granting utility easement acquisition on real property for the purpose of demonstrating borough site control of the water treatment plant improvement project.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion by Powell, second by Robbins. Discussion. You're the maker of the motion.
I don't have a problem with this at all. I do have a problem with values. I do not, in good faith, feel that we should devalue this property because of a easement that we had to get through the other parts of it. If we're going to be selling our borough-owned properties at a fair market value, and I think we should stick to that fair market value. Although, I mean, I'm not opposed to selling the property, but if we're going to sell it for basically 50 cents a square foot, then why are we not doing that for everything else? And that's not feasibly, that's economically not going to help us as a city at all. So that, I'm not opposed to it. I'm opposed to the dollar values.
Okay. Assemblymember
Dalrymple. Madam Mayor, I guess this is a question to the borough administrator. I also was just wondering where the 50 cents per square foot was based on.
Originally, when we were negotiating this, and this is something I heard from the last borough manager and kind of got involved with, and kind of at the 11th hour, because we have these federal funding partners that we have to appease, and you know, if we don't get reimbursed for a $1.5 million impact, that has pretty significant influence on working capital for the borough. You know, we tried to purchase the easement outright, and that wasn't amenable at the time to him. And it's, to my understanding, that's still not amenable. So this was his version of getting to the end here.
To follow up on that.
Yeah, go ahead, so, Assemblymember Dalrymple.
His proposal was 50 cents per square foot.
Yeah, and there's, you can kind of see the breakdown of his consideration of $11,000.
Yeah, it was just that 50%.
Yeah, yeah.
I wasn't sure.
Exactly.
And then the other thing, and I'm very much like Dave, I am not opposed to this, but I'm always looking for some wording from the code that shows the process that we went through. And I think that you've pretty well displayed the value of doing this.
Mm-hmm.
But I was looking for the words that this was in the best interest of the borough.
Yeah.
If you would give me that verbal assurance. I just didn't see that in here.
The easement agreement has already been signed and recorded, so we have the easement agreement.
This is to the selling of borough property part.
Yep. Yep. I think that selling the property for achieving this easement agreement is in the best interest, because without that easement agreement in place, we wouldn't be able to proceed and demonstrate site control. We do have site control currently now, but the sale process has not been dictated.
Okay. So for the public, as I understand it, on December the 3rd, we purchased the easement on his property. His property.
December 5th, yeah.
And we paid $1.50 per square foot for that easement.
We have not paid any consideration for it, because he wanted Mr. Glasner would like the property exchange for the consideration of $11,000. And embedded in that, you can see that there's a $5,100 utility easement consideration taking out of the total price of the land.
Right. So what? So then I misunderstood this document that was signed in December. I thought this was the payment that we gave him for the easement on his current land.
So we have
this utility easement agreement.
We did not pay.
We haven't paid him yet?
No, we have not paid anything for that easement agreement.
But tentatively, we owe him money for that $1.50 square foot.
No, we negotiated that we'd bring this forward and that we'd attempt to execute this sale as desired. And regardless, we're going to pay for the easement agreement. That's just what we do. So if for some reason this isn't decided, we will still pay for the easement agreement.
Right. But he's agreeing to the $1.50 easement on his property, if and only if we sell him the adjacent property.
Well, he
at a lower value.
Kate might be able to explain a little bit better if you want to, but we have already achieved the easement, so we technically, in a good faith effort, this is what, you know, we said that we'd bring forward to the assembly and try to execute, essentially.
So you achieved the easement in a verbal agreement, not in terms of dollars exchanged.
Correct.
Okay. But the verbal agreement is contingent on the sale of a land adjacent to his property at that price.
Correct.
With that easement built in.
And the easement's already filed and recorded, yep.
Okay. Go ahead, so Assembly Member Powell.
The way I read this, though, is you guys, this is a proposal of the value. Because in this thing it says, the borough for the necessary utility easement in exchange for consideration of his request to purchase that at that value.
Yep.
So that does not mean, when you bring this to us, then we're still going to, my feelings is, as an Assembly Member, I need to pick this apart, okay?
Yeah.
I'm not disagreeing with, maybe if we're going to buy the utility easement through the property at full value of whatever we buy utility easements at, I just, and again, reading through this whole document, am not comfortable selling borough-owned property land for undervalued.
I mean, that just makes no sense to me at all. I mean, I'm not saying don't sell him the land. This is a verbal proposal that he came out with. I mean, I could have came out and said, I want it for 10 cents. But the borough assembly here, sitting here, may say no to the 10 cents. Like, I am basically saying no to 50 cents. It just seems like very low value to me. Mm-hmm. I'm not against it. I just think the value is too low. And I'm going to vote no on this for just because of that. And if he wants to come back and make a different offer or something, I will retain it, you know, look at it. But I'm not going to, this is just crazy to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're purchasing the utility easement through his property and through the property we're going to buy.
That we own. Yeah.
And we're going to pay for that, and it's going to come off the price of this. So basically, he's getting it for under 50 cents because you took the $5,000 off the price of the land already.
Mm-hmm. So, Assembly Member Otteson.
Before we go down this road of selling this, is a 10-foot easement big enough?
I think it is. We've talked to Tom, Public Works Director, over this, and for our purposes, it is. We could probably get an excavator on it, and if it's a problem in the future, we'll address it. But given the short-term nature of this, the circumstances we're faced with, we had to demonstrate site control in a quick capacity. So this is what we worked out.
Okay, and that brings up my next question. How much of a time crunch are we in if we postpone this until the next assembly meeting?
We're not in a time. I mean, again, the easement agreement has been signed, recorded. We got site control. We're all good in terms of our federally funded partners. We do owe Mr. Glasner, in the very least, a consideration for the easement.
Yes.
But this was in a good faith effort to follow through on our verbal agreement. So.
Okay, at $1.50 per square foot for the easement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Assembly Member Powell.
So at no time, the administration never made a promise that he would get this property for this amount of money.
Well, for one, we could never do that because that's out of the administrator's control. So this
right.
would be a borough assembly decision, and
okay.
that's why we said, okay. Do our best to get this across the line.
And for the public, the adjacent property that we would sell him is a third of what the value, fair market value, is in that area, mm-hmm. correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, and that's why we're having this discussion. Assembly Member Powell.
And I'm just going to read this a little bit for the public to know this, okay? So the 235 feet by 125 is 29,375 square feet, or 50 cents of what? Comes out to $14,687.50. Then the survey cost is split, is what I'm understanding, right? For $18.91.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to buy back at $1.50 a foot. This is where this makes no sense to me. A 10 by 340 foot easement for $5,100 and sell him that property for $11,478. That makes no sense to me at all that we are going to sell land and buy it back for more.
Yeah, understood. I appreciate that. I appreciate Mr. Glasner working through and actually signing the agreement. This is what his proposed terms were to deliver, and we're just following through on that. So.
Okay.
All right. Assembly Member DeBoard.
Two clarification questions. So if this goes no, we're not holding up the progress of the water treatment center. That's correct?
Yep, that's correct.
And second thing, are we 100% sure that... Let me read this real quick. Repurpose as a backwash discharge sewer line. Are we 100% sure we need that? Because I thought and...
We are 100% sure
okay.
we need it.
Yeah.
Okay. That's it.
And we're already having conversations on how to approach construction related to that discharge line.
Okay.
Yes, we definitely need that. Engineers told us that. And we are 100% sure that we have the easement.
It is in your packet, just
okay.
so you guys don't have to take my word for it.
All right. So, Assembly, if we vote this down, we can entertain another proposal at a later time.
Yep.
On this same item, correct? It's not like a resolution or anything of that sort.
If I might.
Yeah.
And just for clarity, it won't need to come back to the Planning and Zoning Commission. From their lens, they're reviewing it from a land purpose and land use. They're not evaluating it from the price of the item. That would be under a different policy.
All right. Thank you. And Assemblymember Dalrymple.
This is just additional information that would help me to understand this, but the basically appraised value of that all that land is $1.50 per square foot.
That's the assessed value.
Based on that. We've not
gotten an appraisal of this
property.
But
that's based on something.
Yeah. Yep.
I still don't know where the 50 cents comes in. And then the other question is with the easement that has been recorded, mm-hmm. that's already been surveyed. That's good. Or does that require additional survey?
Pete, you might comment on that. Do you know if that...
Easements don't necessarily require additional surveys. The easement's recorded with the associated plat, and that now reflects on the record. If there was a survey ordered for another purpose, that easement would be overlaid on the existing plat and any other boundary lines that were adjusted to it. So from a legal perspective, all plats are recorded with the Department of Natural Resources in the district in which they were approved, and the easement is also recorded in that fashion.
Okay. Thank you. Assemblymember Dalrymple.
If I could get back to the survey cost, so the survey that's mentioned here that would be shared, we would pay half.
That would be for the land sale.
Just the land itself.
Yep, correct.
And we don't normally do that, right?
No, we do not.
The purchaser to do that.
Correct. If somebody wants to purchase borough-owned land, they will have to pay the survey cost, the appraisal cost. Yep.
Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. Does everyone understand the situation? All right. Any other comment? Poll vote, please.
Yes. Assembly members Dalrymple?
No.
Howe?
No.
DeBoer?
No.
Robbins?
No.
Audison?
No.
And Mayor Gilbert?
No. We have no unfinished business, so new business, item 13A. This is on page 68, Assembly. Resolution number 01-24-1838 of the Assembly of the City and Borough of Wrangell, Alaska, declaring parcel 03-020-303, Florschutz, and parcel 03-020-204, Heller, hazardous.
Move to approve resolution number 01-24-1838.
Second.
All right. Motion by Powell, second by Robbins. You touched on this a little bit in your report, but would you give us another report here?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Mayor. So this is following suit of what I articulated in the manager's report. Essentially declaring these individual parcels for the Florschutz and the Heller family as unusable, hazardous properties, and that'll get them started on the DNR land swap process. So doing right by them, as well as the community, want to inform them that these are properties that have hazardous debris on them, and it's still private property, so they shouldn't be going on them anyway. But just wanted to make that clear and start that process. And just so you know, the land swap, again, it starts with the hazardous declaration. And then this will go to the assessor. The assessor will deem this valid, assign a $0 value, essentially making the property unusable. And that's the FEMA, or sorry, that's the state's term for eligibility for the DNR land swap. And then they'll have a preliminary decision. And then after the preliminary decision, they'll start the process of here's the properties that are available that we can convey to you.
And they'll work directly with the families.
And then the state would then take ownership of that land once they select a different piece of property.
Okay. Any questions or comments, Assemblymember Dalrymple?
Mayor, a question to the borough manager. Mason, earlier in your report, you mentioned that the families were in support of this.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. So I've met with each of the families.
Thank you.
At length about this, and we're going to stay in touch as the process continues to go down the line.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions? All right, poll vote, please.
Yes, Assemblymembers Powell?
Yes.
DeBoer?
Yes.
Robbins?
Yes.
Hodgson?
Yes.
Davenport?
Yes.
And Mayor Gilbert?
Yes. Item B is on page 72, approval of assignment of lease in the Wrangell Marine Service Center for Mill Dock Number 1 from Alaska Ice Seafoods Incorporated, doing business as Fathom Seafoods, to Wind and Tide LLC, doing business as Peninsula Seafoods.
Approval to assign Wrangell Marine Service Center Mill Dock Lot Number 1 from Alaska Ice Seafoods Incorporated, doing business as Fathom Seafoods, to Wind and Tide LLC, doing business as Peninsula Seafood, for the existing square footing size of approximately 7,460 square feet.
Second.
Okay, motion by Powell, second by Robbins.
Yeah, fairly simple.
Report, yeah.
Just assignment of the lease, moving from Fathom Seafoods to Wind and Tide LLC or Peninsula Seafoods. I believe this partner will be working with Dustin Phillips down there on Mill Dock 1. So, welcoming you to the borough, and I'm excited for you to do business here.
Yep. Any comments or questions, Assembly? All right, hearing none, poll vote, please.
Yes, Assembly members DeBoer?
Yes.
Robbins?
Yes.
Audison?
Yes.
Davenport?
Yes.
Hall?
Yes.
And Mayor Gilbert?
Yes. Item C, approval to create a Wrangell Marine Service Center lease yard lot 9 and assign to Patrick A. Ellis, doing business as Wrangell Boat Shop LLC.
Move to approve or create a Wrangell Marine Service Center lease yard lot 9 and assign to Patrick A. Ellis, doing business as Wrangell Boat Shop LLC.
Second.
Okay, motion by Powell, second by Robbins. Administrative report, please.
Yes, this is actually a new lease in our really large Marine Service Center that Steve has been working on. This is Pat Ellis. Many of you know him from the boat shop in the Inner Harbor. So this will be an opportunity to conduct his business in the Marine Service Center. It's kind of wedged in that lot back by the old mill dock adjacent to Trident. So just efficient utilization of the space, and excited to offer the opportunity at the current lease rate for Mr. Ellis.
40 by 50 foot space.
Yep, 2,000 square feet.
Okay. Any questions, comments? Okay, poll vote, please.
Yes, Assembly members Robbins?
Yes.
Audison?
Yes.
Davenport?
Yes.
Powell?
Yes.
DeBoer?
Yes.
And Mayor Gilbert?
Yes. Item D, approval to change the Board of Equalization meeting date from May 6, 2024 to May 13, 2024.
Move to approve the change of the BOE meeting date from May 6, 2024 to May 13, 2024.
Second.
Okay, motion by Powell, second by Robbins.
I'm going to defer to Kim on this one because she just told me I have to have it on there, so.
the request from the assembly to move the date, and it's allowable for the assembly to do that. And on the published timeline for the exemptions, property tax exemptions, we have this date on there already.
Okay. Just a housekeeping matter. Any questions, Assembly? All right. Poll vote, please.
Yes. Assembly members Audison?
Yes.
Davenport?
Yes.
Powell?
Yes.
DeBoer?
Yes.
Robbins?
Yes.
And Mayor Gilbert?
Yes. Item E, approval to send harbor accounts receivable delinquent accounts to collections.
Move to approve to send to harbor accounts receivable delinquent accounts to collections.
Second.
Motion by Powell, second by Robbins.
Yep.
Report.
This is a kind of standard operating procedure for us. We typically send harbor collections once yearly. So this is just cleaning up delinquent accounts to the tune of about $54,000 estimated right now. You know, a little bit of background on the process is how this works. Steve and I, we look at the balances. We don't look at the names at all. There are circumstances where people have paid since this list has came across, because obviously we had to put it on here for the agenda. For those instances, those people won't be sent to collections. This allows, actually, we're doing this a little bit differently than we have in the past. We're actually going to send them to collections at the end of February, the month of February. So they have that timeline to pay in full completely. We'll be advertising delinquent accounts in the newspaper in circulation for the next few weeks. And we'll be doing the same exact thing with the utilities, which is the next item. So utilities is a lesser amount, but just cleaning up. And, you know, I think we can entertain solutions moving forward of safeguarding our accounts receivable in the future, and I think we have some. I have some policy ideas to do that.
Assembly Member Powell.
So we've made every effort, 100%, on contacting people and all this stuff for the collections and things. And then my other question is, where does the, what do you mean by send to collections? Where are we sending our collection, our receivables?
So we actually use a third-party vendor. It's called Cornerstone's Collections, and we send those to that vendor. We have a platform that we can see everything that we've sent, and obviously they charge a fee, typically about 50% of what we send to them. However, we've exhausted all attempts, and the harbor will continue along the process. They still impound vessels, and do you have anything to add, Steve?
I personally called and hand-delivered many of the invoices that you see on there that are asking. People that I can get a hold of, anyway, that are in town.
And as Steve said, that some fairly large ones have came off the list since then, so that's,
oh, good.
That's great. And we're offering, again, another over a month before we do this, just to show that we're serious, but you have this time to pay it in full.
Well, we lose 50% or more when we send them to collections, and the problem is that same individuals crop up on the list over and over again, and when do we get to the point where we just don't let them moor in our harbors?
Yeah. I would agree. I think if there's a pattern behavior, and it's up to me and the harbor master to move forward with that. So I think in order to safeguard the ratepayer, that's probably the best procedure moving forward.
Okay. Assemblyman.
Okay, so I was going to talk about that, is that most businesses, and I still consider this a business, once you get on a delinquent list like this, you don't get a charge again, basically. I mean, there's no more charging. So I would like to see us do something with on these names that are coming up and cropping up, and we have to go out and lose 50% of our, you know, our rates here, that we have to pay in advance stuff. Like, mm-hmm. If you're going to come back into our harbor, I want an advance payment, and you don't get to be delinquent at all. I mean, you... some kind of way to say, okay, you know, you've already been on our delinquent list, we've already had to send you out, spent a lot of money to do it, so basically you got 30 days. If you're 30 days, we confiscate the boat. I want something better than 90 and 120 days out.
Mm-hmm.
Because it don't make no sense to keep doing this.
Agreed. I think this is that'd be a great policy to, again, kind of safeguard the ratepayer.
Yeah. Any other discussion? All right, poll vote, please.
Yes, Assembly Members Audison.
Yes.
Dalrymple.
Yes.
Powell.
Yes.
DeBoer.
Yes.
Robbins.
Yes.
And Mayor Gilbert.
Yes. Motion passes. Item F, approval to send utility accounts receivable and delinquent accounts to collections.
Move to approve to send utility accounts receivable and delinquent accounts to collections.
Second.
Okay, motion by Powell, second by Robbins. And again, Borough Manager, this is the same situation, only utilities.
Yep, utilities will parallel the same process for the harbor. We're going to post these in the Sentinel over the next few weeks. It's the same timeline, end of February. It has to be paid in full. A little bit easier to not offer the service further after they're sent to collections. And typically what we see with utilities, which is different than the harbor, is many of these accounts people have either left town, they never paid their obligations before leaving, or they transferred out of a rental property and left that obligation and went somewhere else. So these will be sent to collections in the same fashion as the harbor delinquencies.
Okay. Any questions?
So that's a little bit more difficult, I think, because we're in the middle of winter.
Right.
And I don't know about the laws and rules of you can't just shut someone's power off in the middle of winter. I don't think you can.
No.
Maybe you can look into that, but I mean, I don't really want to have a lot of properties freezing up and all that stuff because we shut somebody's property
off. So this doesn't necessarily mean that we completely sever service. It just means we send it to collections, and that's, you know, there's some consequences associated with that. To answer your question, we technically can shut off utilities. Alaska doesn't have any statute preventing that, even if it's below freezing. Some states do. We traditionally don't do that because it's, you know, we care about our residents and the safety of them. So we try to work with property owners and then really hammer the collections in the springtime. However, these accounts, many of them are old accounts, and we're just kind of cleaning those up.
Well, on your list, you do have people that it looks like to me that are still here and still using, and they're still 120 days plus out. Okay, so same situation I said earlier, you need to start. We need to start. Either they're paying forward or they're not on. We're not going to turn them on. I mean, you can't make all of us pay for delinquent accounts, is what I'm trying to say.
Agreed. Yep. Agreed.
Assemblymember Dalrymple.
This might, I don't know if this is a solution or not, but I'm familiar in other places where if it's a rental property, the landowner, the landlord, if you will, is responsible and if there's a failure to pay the utility. So that might be something to look into. Again, I don't know if you have the ability to connect that legally or not.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I think there's several policy moves we can make from a harbor perspective, but also a utility enterprise fund perspective to help prevent this stuff from happening in the future. So I'll get some solutions to the assembly here in February.
Thank you. All right. Assembly member DeBoard.
Just a clarification. We've done our due diligence to contact everybody on this list and make sure that...
Yep, ample time. So our utility clerk's really diligent, sends an email, voicemail, tries to make contact verbally no matter what in these instances. So she's really great at it. So.
And this will be published in the paper as well?
Published in the paper as well. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Assembly member Powell.
So I only have one more question about how you said to Cornerstone. Do they charge you by the value or by the person?
They charge you by the value that you're sending to collections.
So, okay, so let me rephrase that. So if I owe 25 cents, you're going to, see what I'm saying from this? Okay, so does it cost us more? Because you have a lot of them on here that are $36, $17. Is it worth sending those to collections?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Costing us more money rather than just write those off?
No, so you can just write those off. They'll be written off anyway. This just gives us the authority to send them to collections. So obviously we're not going to send something that's $4 to a collection aid. We'll just write that off.
That was my question. You're looking at something that's of value to us to do. I mean, somewhere you got to cut the break and just say, well, this is not even, they're going to charge us, you know, $25 to collect $5.
Right.
That don't make no sense.
Yeah, it's immaterial for our purposes, so we wouldn't consider... entertaining. Okay. That wouldn't be worth our time as a staff to even input it into the
All right.
Any other questions? Assembly member DeBoard.
One question on that. It was my understanding that it was 50% of whatever they captured back.
That's correct.
They're not just if there's bottom line was okay.
Yep.
All right.
So if
you confused me more than
But it's still not worth our time to send it for $5. Right. You know?
All right. Poll vote, please.
Yes. Assembly members Dalrymple?
Yes.
Powell?
Yes.
DeBoard?
Yes.
Robin?
Yes.
Audison?
Yes.
And Mayor
Yes. Motion passes. Attorney's file available in the clerk's office, and we will adjourn at 7:08 p.m.